keeping it nice and light, talking about sneakers. We all love our sneakers, obviously, but if you've got a friend, you would know that some love them more than others. For example, a pair of Kanye West's Yeezy Boots 350 V2 Black Static Adidas sneakers can be found online for prices up to a few thousand dollars. That's a month's worth of rent for some for a bedroom in Sydney's inner west, which is absolutely mind-boggling. But with such a high demand for sneakers and brands, new and old, producing them, it does beg the question, is it really possible to find sneakers which are both comfortable and sustainable? This sounds like a plug. It's not, I promise. But to answer that question on those issues of sustainability and their production, I am joined right now on the line by Emily Brayshaw. She's a lecturer in fashion and design history and theory at UTS to discuss the benefits of some of our most versatile footwear choices. Good morning, Emily.
Hi, how you doing, Amelia?
Good. It's so great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks.
So earlier this year, I guess the big thing that stands out to me is that there are cases where hundreds of people are like queuing around the block to buy a pair of Yeezy sneakers, sometimes priced at $3,000.
Yeah.
For someone who isn't a sneaker nut, like, could you describe maybe some of the appeal behind a pair of shoes like that?
Sure. Look, on the one hand, they are extremely comfortable, right? We all know that sneakers are comfy, but there is more to it than that. And I think part of the attraction is that for people, it's being part of a movement, right? There's a connection there to other sneakerheads, other people who are really passionate about sneakers. There's a connection, you know, some people are really great Kanye fans, so there's a connection to that, you know. And so it's an opportunity for them to be a part of, you know, a movement that they really feel about, strongly about and passionately about, you know.
Absolutely. And I think the history of clothing and particularly streetwear is really interesting because I know historically that leisure and leisure clothing has often been associated with, you know, self-expression and higher socioeconomic status. So when we look at things like high-priced sneakers, is that kind of the case here? Like what kind of subcultures do, you know, high-quality sneakers represent in these cases?
Well, it just kind of depends because, so on one hand, you have the conspicuous consumption of subcultures like rap, right? And, you know, you have the rappers in their designer labels and, you know, and so obviously having the latest and rap celebrities doing like sneaker tie-ins. And that's been happening, you know, for more than 30 years, right? You've got Run DMC doing their 1986 track My Adidas and, you know, they relaunched a pair of 1986 Adidas fairly recently with a limited release. So there are those sorts of times as well. But then there are other people, you know, who are maybe into luxury fashion brands. And luxury fashion brands have now jumped on the bandwagon as well, and they release couture sneakers as part of their couture collections. So, you know, there's really sort of something for everyone, I think.
There are definitely a lot of different draw points that people engage with sneakers in that kind of way. And one of the aspects is also that fashion's often been intertwined with identity and self-expression, as you're saying. And so I'm really curious to know then, when does that line cross over into raising concerns about their sustainability when we're talking about things like fast fashion?
Yeah, sure. Look, and certainly fast fashion is a huge issue, not only for shoes, but for clothing as well. So there is a site called the Good Shopping Guide, and, you know, you can look that up on the Google, like the young people say, like you can say Google on your radio program.
I think adding the word the always makes it far more relevant and up to date, like the Facebook, right. The Google.
Yeah, nice. So the Good Shopping Guide helps customers to make more informed choices. There is a lot of greenwashing in the industry. And so, you know, there will be claims that, you know, some of them are made from maybe vegan leather or sustainable products, but there's still a lot of toxic petrochemical components and glues that go into them. The Good Shopping Guide also as well, though, can point you in the direction of shoes that are ethically made as well. So, you know, there was a bit of a outcry a few years ago about designer shoes being made in sweatshops. This is still definitely the case, but some organisations have made an effort really to improve the working conditions in their factories. So that's something that people can, you know, can get onto as well if they are thinking about environmental concerns. And what also is happening too is, you know, sneaker designs realising that, you know, eco clothes don't have to be daggy, right? And so, for example, you know, Vaja sneakers, Megan the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, is a big fan of those. And, you know, they're ethically produced as well. And, you know, obviously she's a leading global trendsetter at the moment.
When you're talking about these, some of these companies that are taking the charge and trying to be more ethical in their production process, I was reading that there was one case where one company was using Amazonian rainforest rubber. Could you unpack that? Because I don't even know where to begin with that. Like,
yeah, that's an interesting one. That's Vaja. So, look, again, it's a tricky one. You know, you've got your on a bit. It all depends, like, how it's harvested, how it's made. So I guess what people would have to do is look into that and work out the level of greenwashing, right, that's being involved with that. And also maybe think too, and, you know, I don't know these shoes personally, but also think, like, is there only maybe a percentage of them that's being made from this rubber, a percentage of the shoes, I mean. So is it maybe only the soles? Is it the whole thing? What sort of impact that's going to have? Also, whether it's only certain models within the brand or limited releases that are using that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And you've mentioned greenwashing a few times throughout this interview. For those who might not have heard that term before, could you explain a little bit about what that is?
Sure. It's just a term. It's sort of related to the idea of whitewashing, you know, in that you sort of paint over a problem to make it sort of sound really ecologically viable, but in fact it's just spin.
Absolutely. And I guess you were talking also about the Good Shopping Guide a little bit earlier as a way that we as consumers can take charge and be informed. But there is also in that greenwashing conversation a larger debate, I guess, about the ability to purchase sustainable ethical goods, which often does require you to have a lot more disposable income to start
off with.
Absolutely.
It really does. And I think that's a key too, that you know, I think people, you know, don't need to be guilted into that. And there are ways to purchase sustainably, even if you don't have a lot of money. So things like secondhand, things like markets, you know, also things like pay it forward sites. You know, sure, the clothes might have not necessarily been made sustainably or ethically, but the point is, from a sustainability perspective, you're keeping them out of landfill, you're prolonging the life cycle of the garments or the shoes, and that's a really key thing to be thinking of as well.
I think it's so interesting because I personally, my entire wardrobe is almost all like secondhand, like vintage or like, you know, just stuff from op shops, really. But I think that, like, that doesn't have to be the only option. Like you said, those pay it forwards or, you know, sort of investing in seeing your products as a way of engaging with a broader conversation on sustainability. Like, there are many options.
I think so too. And I think also, I mean, something, if we're bringing it back to sneakers, sometimes, again, keeping it out of the landfill, but also scarcity of releases. If there's a rarity to something, if it's something that you've really saved up for, something that you've coveted, you know, and you finally get your hands on it, you are more likely to look after it. You're more likely to hang on to it for longer. You know, you're more likely to have that emotional connection to it rather than, it, you know, wearing it three times for the gram and then chucking it away. You know, and so that's sort of something part of it as well. It's how we obtain our clothes. That's embedded into our stories around what we wear. And I think that can help drive sustainability practices in fashion as well.
It's definitely an attitudinal sort of shift that, like, no matter how much income we do make, we can all do a little bit more better behind our choices.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time this morning,
My
Emily.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I am currently on the phone with Emily Brayshaw. She's a lecturer in fashion and design history and theory at UTS, talking to us here on The Daily about the popularity and history of sneakers, how people value them in both fashion and the growing sustainability around their production.